Creation, Our Foundation, with Dr. Grady McMurtry. Session 3, 900 Years Old.
Well, we were talking about the subject of how did people used to live to be 900 years old. I realized, looking around the audience, some of you think you can teach this, but I would appreciate it if you let me do it instead. Remember, again, we're going to be doing two more lunch meetings tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the Ark of Noah, its capabilities, its capacities, the fact that it will never be found, etc. And I've had a few questions about that, but please wait until tomorrow for that. And on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about natural selection. You know, evolutionists talk about how survival of the fittest and natural selection promote evolution. They make people think that that's what causes evolution to occur in nature. The fact of the matter is that survival of the fittest and natural selection actually prove creation and disprove evolution. And tonight we're going to be talking about the age of the earth. Tomorrow night we're going to be talking about how there's no proof for human evolution. And on Wednesday night we're going to talk about people and dinosaurs living together. So those are the subjects for this week. Hope you'll enjoy those. Now, talking about how did people used to live to be 900 years old, when you read your Bible, you will notice that if you take out two men, you have to take out Enoch, who was taken alive to heaven and will die later, but he was taken alive. And there's one fellow named Lamech. Now, there's a couple of guys named Lamech in the Old Testament before the flood. This one is not the murderer. It's a common name before the flood, kind of like George, right? But there's one guy who died young at 770 years old. I asked the Lord about that one time. I said, how come, you know, if you take the others, men were averaging 912 years old, but what about this guy dying young at 770? I asked the Lord about that. He said, well, he stepped in a gopher hole, broke his leg, and we had to shoot him. So take it for what it's worth. But again, let's think about this. If you take out these two, the Bible clearly says that people used to live to be an average man, 912, and we know that women outlive men on average. Now, we don't know how old the women were. They're not listed, but there is no reason to believe that, Eve might have been as much as 1,000 years old when she died. We don't know. But today, think about it. People used to live to be 10 times older than they are today. Don't we sort of think of, pretty old age in the 90s today, right? But it used to be in the 900s. And so today we're only living 1/10 as long as people used to live, if you think about it. Although I'm sure there are women in the room here who will agree with me, there are advantages to living only 1/10 as long as we used to. Is that correct, ladies? I mean, Eve could have had children for 450 years. I didn't see anybody fall out of their chair, but it's an interesting thought, don't you think? But let's think about how did people used to live to be 900 years old? Now, because of the folks that are over here, I'm going to try to do this. I can't promise we do it real well. But you need to be able to defend this to people, because there are going to be people who say, well, you know, what about dinosaurs? What about the age of the earth? We talk about that tonight. And they're going to say, well, you cannot possibly believe that people live to be 900 years old. And you've got to be able to defend this to a world that is asking good questions. So let's start thinking about it. How did that happen? Well, first of all, you have to remember, and I'm sorry, my thing is that the world before the flood was really, really quite different. Now, if you were with us last night, you will remember that Pangaea used to exist, where the land mass was pretty much all together from the time of creation to the time of the flood, correct? And remember that all of that land pretty much was arable. Today, of course, much of the earth is not, because of the mountains and deserts and so forth. But before the flood, it was really a very different world. We won't say that it was paradise. That's not what it is. But it had great living conditions. And so let's start thinking about this. First of all, this is the genome of a human male. These are the 23 pairs of chromosomes that would make up a human. But in this case, we know it's male because it has one X, one Y chromosome here for gender. You may remember women have two X chromosomes, men have one X, one Y. By the way, when I find something that I think in the presentations would be particularly interesting to men or particularly interesting to women, I always try to pass that on. So guys, I want you to take note of this. Remember, we have one X, one Y chromosome. They have two X's, correct? This is why women are a doubly unknown quantity to men. Come on, X is an unknown quantity and they got two. But let's think about, at creation, it was perfect, correct? Now, if you had perfect genetic information, you would live longer than you do today. You have to remember that because of human sin, decay started throughout the entire universe. That includes your genetics as well as everything else in the physical universe. And aging process is partly due to the decay of genetic information over time. And so, and I'm sorry, I think maybe I need to get some new batteries, but nonetheless, think about the genetics. Aging is mostly genetic. Now, the human genome and so forth, every cell of your body has 1,000 to 1 million mutations per day. I want to define the word mutation for you scientifically. The word mutation scientifically means copying error. A mutation is a copying error from the previously existing information. Now, think with me for just a moment. Evolutionists claim that things in nature, by random chance, get bigger, better, faster, smarter. Is that correct? Come on, that's the basic. And remember, you can talk. It's a teaching session. But they say that random chance causes an increase in intelligence or complexity over time. But you know as well as I do that that's not true. Always goes downhill, ultimately. Now, it may be neutral in this generation, but after generations, it will ultimately go downhill. It will never get better. Think about copying something for just a moment. As a matter of fact, you can disprove evolution for $10. Seriously, just go to a copying machine with a fresh ream of cheap paper, take an original but really high quality printed page, picture or text, put it on top of the copying machine, make a copy, then take the original and throw it away. Then take the copy, put it on top of the copying machine, make a copy, and then throw that one away. Then take the copy, put it on top of the copying machine, make a copy, then throw that one away. Then take the copy, put it on top of the copying machine, make it. Hello? What happens after 20 times? Well, the image will start to either get darker or lighter. You will see white pixels where there used to be black ones, or black ones where they were never there in the original. Copying never makes anything better. Copying only makes things worse. Think with me, can you copy something more perfectly? Hello? No, you can either copy something perfectly or imperfectly, but you cannot copy it more perfectly, correct? And so what do we do in genetics? We copy the previously existing information. We copy mama, papa, pass it on into the next generation in new combinations, but never new information. And so copying only makes things worse, never better. And so the mechanism that evolutionists claim produces evolution in nature actually disproves evolution. And the average human male, and I'm looking around this area, I'll use myself as an example. Guys, we have about 85 trillion cells in our body. Every one of those cells has 1,000 to 1 million mutations inside each cell each day. The fact of the matter is, you and I should not exist. Hello? Think with me for a moment. You are approximately the 250th copy from the original. Now, if you start losing information after 10 or 20 copies, how much would you lose after 250 copies? And today we now know, because of the completion of the Human Genome Project in April of 2003, here's the bad news. We are losing 1 to 2% of our genetic information per generation today. That includes the information for intellect. We are not getting bigger, better, faster, smarter. We are actually getting smaller, slower, and dumber. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. But think with me. Each generation, we are losing 1 to 2%. We are adding an average of 64 new mutations per generation. And that does include the information for intellect. It is absolutely true that your great grandparents were smarter individually than we are today. You know, I love my grandchildren, but they have 2 to 4% less genetic information in them than I do. And so we are getting worse over time. And one of the things that people used to live to be 900 was they had started with perfect genetic information. Again, you'd live a lot longer. But today our information is being corrupted and more, it's like a snowball going downhill. Now, we are approximately the 250th copy since the original. We ought not to be here. But God, in his infinite foreknowledge, knew that this would happen when sin entered into the universe. And so what did he do to prevent us from already being gone and extinct? He put 7 little engines in our genome. We have 3 billion bits of information in our genome, and God put 7 little machines pre-programmed inside our genome that spend their entire day going up and down our chromosomes, repairing the minor mutations that occur each day. They will not correct things like sickle cell anemia or hemophilia, but the minor mistakes that are made every day are corrected every day by these 7 little machines. Ain't God good? Come on, you can say amen to that. But without these 7 little machines, we wouldn't even be here. Well, let's keep going. What else? Well, at creation, the earth had a much stronger magnetic field than it has today. Our magnetic field is decaying, and it's decaying fast. For example, the decay of the Earth's magnetic field, we have lost roughly 95% of the magnetic field since creation. You may not realize how impacted that is, but let me sort of explain it. And I also want to say this. I'm going to share, well, there are 19 things that are available on the video because I'll never get through all those in lunch today. But some factors have more than one benefit. So I may mention one, and I may mention it again later because it has multiple benefits. It's not 19 different things, but it is 19 different effects. And so what about the Earth's magnetic field? Why would that, well, keep us living longer? First of all, scientific research has proven that strong doses of magnetism from conception to birth increase longevity. Now, I'm sorry to say this, it's too late for any of you. But why also does the Earth's magnetic field give longevity? Well, first of all, it stabilizes chromosomes, and our chromosomes would have degenerated slower at creation after sin. But the Earth's magnetic field also protects us from deadly radiation that comes from primarily the sun, the solar winds, although there are also some galactic radiation, but primarily it's the solar winds. Now, the solar winds are generated by the sun. This is deadly radiation. The good news is it's ionized, meaning that it's plus or minus charged. And what happens with the Earth's magnetic field? As those deadly radiations are coming from the sun, the Earth's magnetic field, which is called the magnetosphere, bends this deadly radiation coming in at the North Pole and the South Pole, where so few people live. Come on, ain't that a good design? Right? I mean, God's thinking ahead, isn't he? But think about this. This is the only planet in the solar system where that is true. Some planets have no magnetic field. Some planets have a magnetic field axis that's up to 60% different than the axis of rotation. If that were the Earth, this deadly radiation would come in between the tropics where most people live. And we would have a dead zone in the middle. So this is really significant information. But the Earth's magnetic field was 20 times stronger than today at creation only 6,000 years ago. And the Earth's magnetic field decays with a half-life of 1,400 years. So it's decaying very, very quickly. Every 1,400 years, we lose 50% of the energy in the field. And today, it's only 5% of what it was only 6,000 years ago. Now, some of you are old enough to remember this, but this deadly radiation, well, first of all, it causes the northern southern lights, the aurora australis, the boreal, the southern northern lights. When I'm in Russia, sometimes I'm well above the Arctic Circle where you can see these. And they're really, really pretty, but they're deadly radiation. And I mentioned some of you are old enough to remember this. I certainly am. How many of you remember when we decided to go into space, right? What was the primary problem with going into space? It wasn't oxygen. It wasn't water. The primary problem is radiation. Space is full of deadly radiation. And we retire our astronauts after a certain number of hours in space because we can only shield them just so long before it has a really detrimental effect. Unlike some nations, which don't care. You may draw your own conclusions from that. But how many of you remember the Van Allen radiation belts? Anybody remember those? Our big problem when we shot people up into outer space was we had to launch them sometimes all the way out through these bands of deadly radiation. Now, back in the 60s, when we were deciding to go into space and going to the moon and so forth, we knew of two. Today, we know of a third very light field out there. But the Van Allen radiation belts are one of the really big problems. I would also point out, you know, they're selling tickets to go to Mars. Some people bought a one-way ticket. I found that one kind of interesting. But then again, it's a three-year round trip to stay 2 weeks. How would you like to take a three-year trip on a you know, lowest budget vehicle with no possibility of repair? Well, I'll let you think about that too. But at the time of creation, the Earth's magnetic field being 20 times stronger meant that this deadly radiation was pushed way out, away from the Earth. But as the magnetic field is shrinking, what's happening? This deadly radiation is getting closer and closer, and more is leaking through. Ask yourself a question. Why are cancer rates going straight up? Now, this is not the only reason, but this is one of the reasons why cancer rates are going straight up today. More and more radiation is getting through. And I want to make a statement to all of you. I hope you'll find it kind of interesting. Remember, God never intended the earth to last for a long time once it became imperfect. Did you hear that? In a perfect state, of course, it would have remained. But God never intended the earth to last for a long time once it became imperfect. The good news is, I've read the book, there are going to be people here to meet him when he returns, correct? That's the good news. And God has taken precautions to make sure that we will be here when he returns. But the fact of the matter is, humanity and life on earth cannot last more than a few thousand years. You know, evolutionists talk about how the sun is going to burn for another billion years and the earth is going to last for another billion years. It's simply not true. All the systems are running down and life will be irradiated within a couple of thousand years. Now, obviously, you and I don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about our grandchildren, assuming the Lord comes back soon. Is that correct? And this week, I'll be sharing just a few scientific reasons how you can know the Lord is returning soon. I'm not saying when. But one of them is the decay of the Earth's magnetic field, because if he were not to come back for 10, 20,000 years, there wouldn't be any life here. You follow? Well, also remember last night, if you were here, I talked about how on day two, God created some extra moisture in the atmosphere. That was in addition to the water that was on the surface on day one. And on day two, he also creates the layer of water below, correct? But that little bit of extra moisture. Now, I know in Georgia, it's hard to think, me too, in Florida, about extra moisture in the atmosphere. Hello. And we're not talking about a lot. I mean, we're talking about maybe 5% more moisture, maybe 10, but not a lot. But some people think that the earth used to have a cloud canopy. That is absolutely not true. It's impossible. First of all, there's only one planet in the solar system that has a true cloud canopy. It illustrates why we will never go to Venus and why we never had a cloud canopy. First of all, if you've got a cloud canopy, you get runaway greenhouse heating. I can say categorically, we will never land on Venus. The surface temperature is approximately 800 degrees. Oh, come on, that's even hot in Georgia. If you could stand on the surface of Venus and had a pound of lead in your hand, you would watch the lead melt in your hand. Hello? But this is what happens when you have a cloud canopy, trapping the heat inside. I can also say we'll never go to Venus because the white clouds, which make it so easily seen in the sky at night, are made out of sulfuric acid. That's another good reason, too. However, the extra moisture on day two, and again, this is maybe 5%, max 10 kind of thing, that extra moisture has benefits to longevity. Let's think about this. First of all, you take a look at Genesis 8:22. After the flood, God says, now there will be seasons. But before the flood, there were no seasons. We had a universally great atmosphere and environment before the flood. We might say it was somewhat similar to living in a subtropical environment year-round. But because of the events of the flood, which caused that bit of extra moisture to come down as, well, partly the 40 days and 40 nights of rain, but it would continue to be rain, that extra moisture came down. And that opened up the atmosphere to the point where we would now have seasons. But let's think about this. Before the flood, we didn't have summer, winter, spring, fall. And think about the ramifications of that. Georgia is a great agricultural state, as is Florida. And let's think about this for a minute. In Georgia, what is the single biggest issue for a farmer in Georgia? Well, but isn't it that you only have one growing season? And the biggest single problem is a crop failure, right? Oh, now, let's think. The biggest single problem for a farmer is a crop failure, because if you have a crop failure in 1 year, you have to have the resources to get through the second year and get a crop. Is that correct? But think about Central and South Florida, where I live. You realize in Florida, we grow two crops of corn a year. We could grow three. It's just not economic. You see, we plant corn and we harvest it in April and May and ship it up north because you ran out of your corn and you're willing to pay the freight to get ours. But in the summertime, you've got your own corn. So we harvest again in October because you got a taste for corn and you ran out of yours and now you're willing to buy ours again. We can grow radishes in Florida on a 28-day rotation. Now think about that. Before the flood, the same thing occurred. Yes, because of human sin, people had to toil. That was one of the parts of the curse of the sin that God said, now you will have to toil, correct? But think about an environment where you had basically no possibility of crop failure. An environment where if you harvested a crop, you could literally scratch the ground and plant the next day. Well, that would be a little different, right? Food is plentiful. There's no such thing as a crop failure. It's a real farming paradise, right? But after the flood, now we have seasons. Now we have winter. Now you've got to worry about crop failure. Again, the extra moisture. Now I call that a vapor canopy, not a cloud canopy, but just extra moisture. To understand what vapor is, how many of you in the summertime or wintertime, you want to make hot tea? I mean, even here, you make hot tea in the summer, or then you ice it down. Isn't that kind of weird? Anyway, but in the wintertime, you're wanting to put a kettle of water on the stove and you heat it up. I want you to think about this. Think of a kettle on a stove and bringing it to a rolling boil. All right, a rapid boiling. And in the wintertime, you see the steam come out of the spout, correct? But if the water is boiling fast enough, isn't there a space? I mean, just try to visualize this in the kitchen. Isn't there a space between the spout and the cloud in the kitchen? That is a clear space. That is water vapor. You see, you can see through water vapor. It's not cloudy. But also, if you think about it, if you envision this, when you look through that clear spot, the light kind of ripples, doesn't it? There's some distortion. And that is what we would have had before the flood. You would have been able to see the sun, the moon. You would have seen probably up to about 10,000 star points at night. But you would not have seen the faint stars. You would not have seen the Milky Way. And just as a thought, imagine if you were in the ark with Noah and the family, and after the flood, after the 40 days and 40 nights of rain, the first night you look up through a clear sky and you see the Milky Way for the first time in human history. Intriguing thought? Yeah. Now, that extra moisture helps us again with other things. First of all, it would help to reduce ultraviolet radiation. Now, ultraviolet radiation is deadly. Again, in this crowd, I know this is going to be easy. How many of you remember, as I do, when men used to have barbers and women had hair salons? And when you went in those shops, well, the barbers and the hairstylists, they had a little box on the counter next to where they were working. And they were using the same scissors and the same combs from client to client. And to prevent disease and lice being transferred from one to the other, they would take their scissors and their combs and so forth, and they would put them in this little box. And it was five-sided, and there were mirrors, and there was a little blue light in there. Anybody remember that? I certainly do. Now, what was that? That was an ultraviolet light. Why did we do that? Because ultraviolet light kills things. And we were killing the bacteria and the lice and so forth by putting them in that little box with the five mirrors, and the ultraviolet light would bounce around and hit them all over the place. Today, we use chemicals or disposables. Now, why did we change? Because ultraviolet light's a really good method of sterilization, so why did we change? Well, it's real simple. The men and women who were working in those establishments were getting cataracts much earlier. You see, ultraviolet light causes cataracts. Now, I will tell you, just as a matter of information and my own personal attempt to give you good medical advice, I don't care what time of the year it is. When you're outside in Georgia, you need to have on not only sunglasses, but make sure they have blue blocker, 100%. Why is that? Because it will slow down the development of cataracts. Would you like to slow down the development of cataracts? Then take my advice. But always wear sunglasses when you're outside and with blue blocker, because it will slow down the development of cataracts. But ultraviolet light is deadly radiation. So this extra moisture in the atmosphere before the flood would have reduced the amount of ultraviolet radiation coming through. After all, let's think, people were living 10 times longer. If they developed cataracts at the age of 90, what would they have done for the next 800 years? Yeah. But before the flood, they didn't need sunglasses. Hello? You see how some of these factors start to really accumulate over time? And before the flood, there was no significant volcano or earthquake activity either. Remember that at the beginning of the flood, as we showed last night, this is the first time we had any significant earthquake or volcanic activity on Earth. And there was a huge volcanic eruption, of course, with the initiation of the flood, but there were thousands and thousands of volcanoes that went off all over the world as soon as the Earth cracked open. Now, remember that volcanoes don't cause earthquakes. Earthquakes cause volcanoes. When you have an earthquake and land slips and there's a crack, there's an opportunity for hot water, hot rock to come up from below. And massive numbers of earthquakes occur prior to eruptions. This is one way we know that an eruption is imminent, when the number of earthquakes increases. But volcanoes do not cause earthquakes. Earthquakes cause volcanoes. Now, today, how many of you can remember having woke up some Sunday morning, you turned on the radio or the TV to catch some news while you're getting ready to go to church, and you heard an announcement that there had been a major earthquake, let's say in Iran or Iraq or Indonesia, down in South America, and thousands of people died in one morning, because their houses simply collapsed in on them. Is that correct? So earthquakes still kill a lot of people, but volcanoes rarely kill people. I mentioned Mount St. Helens last night, 1980. 57 people died, but they died from terminal stupidity. Well, they were told not to be there, and they chose to be there, so they died from terminal stupidity. Is that correct? But think about the grace of God. When Mount St. Helens erupted, God arranged it so that it blew straight north towards Seattle area, but that was into a national forest, and only 57 people died. If that volcano had blown straight west, it would have killed 50,000. So in God's grace, he directed that volcano to go north. Hello? But today, volcanoes rarely kill people because we have these warnings. We evacuate people and so forth, and we tell them to get out. But think about other volcanoes of historic significance. Tambora, 1815. One of the most massive eruptions in recorded history. Now, we know that there were volcanoes that were much larger. The volcano at Yellowstone, the volcano at Crater Lake and so forth were much bigger. But they're not specifically recorded, say, in the Bible. But volcanoes used to kill a lot of people, too. But today, rarely, is that right? And so again, if you have these warning systems, not so many people die, but back in those days they would have. But before the flood, there weren't any, so you'd live longer. Also, how about pollution? You know, I always get a big kick out of this. I am a Christian conservationist, but I am 100% against environmental terrorism. I have a chapter in my book on that if you're interested. I am absolutely against environmental terrorism. There is absolutely no truth whatsoever that humans have anything to do with climatic increases of heat or cooling. Remember that the Earth has been much hotter prior to the Industrial Revolution than it is today. People have no effect on climate. Now, they can have a small effect on weather. I just came back from Moscow. Moscow is so big that it can be raining in Moscow and snowing outside the city limits, because there's so many people, so much traffic, so many buildings that are being heated, that they actually cause a local warm area, and it will rain when it's snowing outside the city. But that's just a minor local effect that people can have, but we cannot affect climate. But again, before the flood, we had a really wonderful climate. Again, no seasons, easy growing, etc. And no significant pollution. You know, when I was growing up and learning about evolution in Berkeley, they taught me the solution to pollution was dilution. That we're going to simply put this garbage in the atmosphere, in the oceans, in the ground to get rid of it. Of course, today we know that's not a good methodology. That today we know the solution to pollution is prevention. But I want to point out, nature pollutes. Hello? Nature pollutes more than people. You may not realize this, but one volcano on Earth in 1 year can pollute the atmosphere more than all 7.4 billion people alive on Earth. And that's just one volcano, but there's more than one active volcano per year. And what about life in the ocean? I have an interesting question for you. Now, there are creatures in the ocean that produce chlorine, fluorine, borane, which causes the destruction of ozone in the atmosphere. Now, you have been told about the ozone hole. You've been told that the destruction of ozone is a bad thing, correct? But I would also point out to you that the creatures that produce those chemicals in the ocean also produce more oxygen than all the plants on the dry land. So my next question is, do you like to breathe? So would you want to destroy those plants that live in the ocean that produce chlorine, bromine, fluorine, and oxygen? No. You see, sometimes I'll talk about solutions with absolutely no consideration of the consequences. Is that right? Oh. Well, the fact of the matter is, there's no truth to global warming, global cooling being caused by people. It is simply fiction. It's simply a political agenda. Like other political agendas of recent time. But we would not have had significant pollution before the flood, but nature does pollute. Dust storms, fires, like forest fires and so forth. Nature does pollute. Nature is not pristine. I practically died laughing. I live in Orlando, and Interstate 4 connects Daytona to Tampa, so you know I use this I-4 a lot. And down near Lakeland, Florida, some 30 years ago, they built a electric power plant for the city of Lakeland, and you could see it from the interstate. And let me ask you a question. Because of environmental terrorists, the plant had to put out air cleaner than it took in. So why are we building electrical power plants to clean the atmosphere? Hello? Well, think about it. Well, these are some of the things before the flood. They're just science on how people used to live to be 900 years old. Again, we have to take these in combination. It's no one single factor. But let us now think about, what about the additional things that were different before the flood on Earth that deal with medicine? So I was just sharing some science with you. What about medical benefits before the flood? Well, first of all, I mentioned that extra moisture in the atmosphere, and we started in a state of perfection. Is that correct? Come on, folks, you can say amen anytime. But God created it all perfect, and it perfectly worked together until human sin. Is that right? And God gave us a perfect diet. If you take a look at Genesis 1, 29 and 30, God gave us the green plant, yielding seed, and we were, as well as all the other organisms on Earth, vegetarian. Now, you may wonder about that, but I will tell you that I am eternally grateful for Genesis 9:3. If you're not familiar with Genesis 9:3, God says, after the flood, now you shall eat meat. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I'm a meativore. I figure, why eat vegetables if the animals have already done it for you? So, hello? But at creation, God gave us a perfect diet, which was vegetarian. Now, vegetarianism is not a perfect diet anymore. And I would point out, of course, that most vegetarians do supplement their diet with some form of meat, such as fish or fowl. They may eliminate just red meat or something like that. But a vegan diet is dangerous. A true vegan is dangerous because you don't get all the amino acids that you need. And so if you were to have a vegan diet, you need to supplement it. That's all I would say about that for your health, particularly when it comes to eyesight. But initially, it was a perfect diet because think with me, we had a perfect digestive system. We had a perfect immune system. Think about that. You couldn't get sick. Hello? But if you had a perfect food and a perfect digestive system, perfectly capable of getting all the nutrients you need, well, you'd live longer. Is that right? I mean, let's face it. There were no fast food restaurants before the flood. Now, come on, folks. You got to think through these things. Now, but because of human sin, and God's foreknowledge, because the plants were suffering from human sin. The plants are decaying. Our immune system is decaying. Our digestive system is decaying. We can no longer process the things the way we used to. And the plants are no longer as nutritious either. But think about the flood and the consequences of the flood. You see, after the flood, some of the plants that existed prior to the flood no longer existed. They became extinct. They couldn't survive the flood. Now, just stop and think about this one for just a second. Today, most medicines, not all, but today, most medicines are based on plant derivatives. We cannot reproduce the chemistry that exists in a fossil. Do you follow me? We find a fossil plant, we find a fossil animal, we cannot reproduce the chemistry that was in that plant or in that animal prior to its death. So we don't know. But it is perfectly logical and reasonable to believe that before the flood, we were eating plants that had pharmaceutical benefits. And maybe some of the medicines we are discovering today, we're only discovering what used to exist prior to the flood, and we're just rediscovering today. That's perfectly reasonable as well. But plants might have given us pharmaceutical benefits that we are unaware of. And again, we would have lived longer. Hello? And then, of course, I always like to talk about that moisture above. But to start with, humans and animals were vegetarians to begin with, although, again, I'm eternally grateful for Genesis 9:3. But what is another benefit of this moisture? And I think it's pretty easy to talk about this in Georgia. Hello? Would you agree with me that on a really rainy, foggy day, the air just feels heavier? Is that right? It just does. It feels heavier, right? And that's because it is heavier. You can take a cubic foot of dry air, put moisture into it to the point of saturation, and it literally gets heavier. Now, let's think about that extra moisture up there at the time of creation to the flood. Now, the extra came down at the time of the flood, leaving what we have today, but before the flood, there was this extra moisture. That means that extra moisture up there is going to increase pressure down here. Hello? And we have plenty of evidence that that is true, that this is exactly what we had prior to the flood. We have, for instance, amber and air bubbles trapped in amber. I would point out to you, of course, in the Baltic states and in Russia, there's a lot of amber. I've brought up plenty of it back as gifts for people. But isn't it interesting? We now know that amber forms underwater. Yeah, people think of it as tree sap and trapped insects up in the trees when the trees were above ground. But the fact of the matter is, it's not true. Amber, we now know, forms underwater, which means that these things, insects, for instance, the tree sap, etc., had to be underwater to form the semi-precious stone we call amber today. Well, that would certainly speak of a worldwide flood, don't you think? Uh-huh. Well, how do we know? Well, how do we know there was a greater atmospheric pressure before the flood? Insects don't have lungs like you and I do. Insects actually breathe through little holes in the side of their body called spiracles. And the limitation to the size of an insect is not how old it gets. The limitation for the size of an insect is how much oxygen can it get while it's alive. And let's take a look at how we know that the atmospheric pressure was greater before the flood. Well, yes, thank you. I am not afraid to quote evolutionary sources. I often quote evolutionary sources because they say things that prove creation all the time. I love it. And they have far more money for research than we do. And so they spend all this money finding things that are very useful to us. But I'm going to quote some evolutionary sources. An oxygen-rich atmosphere allowed giant insects to grow, supposedly 300 million years ago. We're talking about the Carboniferous period, supposedly 300 to 360 million years ago. But dragonflies with 36-inch wingspans flourished during the Carboniferous period. Research had long suspected that the giant insects and lush forests needed more oxygen than the level of 21% found in today's atmosphere. Well, yeah. Let me continue with an evolutionary source. You see, this comes from New Scientist, which is about one of the most vitriolic evolutionary sites there is. They wrote, and notice this is 22 years ago, plants in marine life preferentially take up certain isotopes of carbon and sulfur, and their absorption changes as the concentration of oxygen rises. That comes from Science magazine, the second highest scientific journal in the world before evolution. Analysis of these isotopes in ancient rocks showed that oxygen content of the atmosphere peaked at 35% between 350 and 250 million supposed years ago. Now, first of all, I would disagree with this. Oxygen never hit 35% in the atmosphere because if it did and you struck a fire, the entire planet would get on fire with the oxygen. Hello? But what they're not taking into consideration is the Bible. They're not taking into consideration looking at science through a biblical Christian world lens. And so what they're really looking at is the contents of these bubbles, but they're thinking as an evolutionist. They're not taking into account the double pressure that existed prior to the flood. Now, our best estimates are 1.6 to 2.2 times the pressure in the atmosphere prior to the flood that we have today. And that pressure was slowly released over 40 days and 40 nights of rain, because think with me, if God had changed that pressure like that, everybody would have died. But God slowly reduced the pressure over 40 days. Nobody even noticed. Hello? It's kind of like a diver with bends and so forth coming up out of a dive. Now, research has shown, please notice, again, Time Magazine, this is a totally evolutionary publication, but even back in 87, they said, looking at bubbles in amber, that there was 50% more oxygen than today. But what they're not looking at is it was double the pressure, it wasn't double the oxygen. Everybody with me? And so, again, this is research done at North Carolina State University, again, published in New Scientist. What did they do? They built an apparatus, and they grew ginkgo plants, raised them in an artificial atmosphere, 5 times the carbon dioxide of today, 1.5 times the oxygen of today, and what happened? They were trying to get the atmosphere of, again, 66 to 145 million supposed years ago, according to their religion. But what did they do? They found the plants grew 3 times faster. Now, environmental terrorists today are trying to tell you to reduce your carbon footprint. When I say that, you should get a brown paper bag. Hello? But reduce your carbon footprint. We've got to stop using fossil fuels, you know, et cetera, right? And when we produce carbon dioxide, we've got to sequester it in the ground in old mines and so forth. But ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly the opposite thing of what we should be doing. First of all, think with me for a moment. We have an expanding world population, is that correct? Now, we should be not burning fossil fuels without a purpose. But we should be burning fossil fuels like crazy as long as it's for a useful purpose. Because what would happen? The plants would simply absorb the carbon dioxide. The oceans would simply absorb the carbon dioxide, and the plant life there needs it. And please tell me, in an expanding population, we need what? Food. What do plants use to make food? Okay, y'all need to learn how to take a test. The teacher or instructor will often give you the answer to the question in the previous question. So what do plants use to make food? Carbon dioxide. What do trees use to make wood? Carbon dioxide. By sequestering carbon dioxide, by preventing its release, we are literally, and I mean this, literally starving people to death around the world. Hello? And the Earth has been far warmer than today. The medieval warm period, which was the most recent period, was much warmer than today, between 850 and 1250. And the Roman warm period, during the time of the birth of Jesus, God wanted to make sure it was nice and warm when he was born. Hello? And the Earth has been significantly warmer in the past, prior to the Industrial Revolution, prior to people burning fuels in mass amounts. And we have no effect on it whatsoever. Well, I'm kind of glad we didn't have lunch today in the sense that I wouldn't want to bother anybody, but these are human blood cells. Now, why would I show you a picture of human blood cells? Well, today you know that you're breathing in air, exhaling air and so forth. You're breathing in more oxygen, you're breathing out more carbon dioxide, correct? And of course, in school, you remember that the red blood cells are what carries the oxygen in and the carbon dioxide out, right? That's under today's atmospheric pressure. However, if you double the atmospheric pressure, it isn't just the red blood cells that carry the oxygen. It's the blood serum. And so if you had a greater air pressure prior to the flood, it wouldn't be just the red blood cells carrying oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. It would be the entire fluid, the entire serum, okay? So if you double the atmospheric pressure, then you'd have more oxygen in, more oxygen out. Think about Adam. He was told to tend a garden that went from Damascus, Syria to Egypt. I mean, Adam could have run a marathon and not get winded. Hello? And while I hate to bring up bad memories, does anybody remember the Sago coal mine accident in 2006 up in West Virginia? Anybody remember that one? A few people do. Well, this was in January of 2006 at the Sago coal mine. There was an accident. 13 miners were trapped underground. 12 of them died from carbon monoxide poisoning. One man survived, but only because he was in a different area of the mine at the time. And when we found him, he was almost dead. Now, what happens when you die from carbon monoxide poisoning? Well, your hemoglobin in your red blood cells likes carbon monoxide better than it does carbon dioxide or oxygen. And so what happens? Once it goes in the red blood cell, it locks it up. And it cannot absorb oxygen, and you die from asphyxiation, literally. So what did we do to save this man? We immediately strapped pure oxygen on his face, evac'd him out to a hospital, and we put him in one of those, a hyperbaric chamber. Now, I don't know specifically here in town, but I do know there are many of them in the Atlanta area. Why do we do that? Initially, they were designed for burn patients, but today they're being used for roughly 36 different medical treatments. But we put you in a hyperbaric chamber, and for instance, in Germany, they treat stroke patients with very good results of reducing stroke to no detriment at all. Or, in addition to that, we have, in England, MS is being treated with hyperbaric oxygen. In France, arthritis, vascular necrosis, sclerosis of the liver, other liver diseases, plastic and cosmetic surgeries. Again, I don't want to disturb anybody, but I hope that you will not be. This lady back in 2005 had a face transplant. They actually cut off this part of her face and put on the face of a cadaver. This is what she looked like a year later. She passed away just recently. At this point, we know of at least another woman, another man who have had the same thing. But think with me for a minute. We would never attempt that surgery if it were not for hyperbaric oxygen. Can you imagine cutting somebody's face off and not being able to put another one on? Hello? So hyperbaric oxygen is very beneficial to health. Also, of course, in Japan, southern deafness, blindness, Sweden, diabetic gangrene, Berger's disease, Belgium, reimplants of total extremities. And I would point out, you know, some of us are supporters of various sports teams from different states. By the way, in India, they treat leprosy with this because it's similar to gangrene with diabetes. Here, we have cerebral palsy. Here, reduction of anesthesia, nausea, and so forth. But this is a single person sit-up hyperbaric chamber. Michael Jackson had one of these to keep his nose on. Oh, if it hadn't been for this, his nose would have fallen off. He'd had so many surgeries, nothing was holding it on. But I mentioned the sports teams because all of the pro and many of the big teams, such as Georgia or Bama, et cetera, have these in their training facilities because from minor injuries, the athletes heal twice as fast. And if you had been living in a world in a hyperbaric chamber before the flood, well, you would have lived longer. Now, I've only shared about half of the things that are actually on the video, but I hope you get the opinion that, in fact, there are reasons to believe that people really could live to be 900 years old, but it's not just one factor, it's many taken in combination.